Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us for another Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. And today we're going to go over a few of the big stories from TexasScorecard.com this week, including talking with a special guest, Chris Putnam, about his commentary on why Texas parents need to take back public schools from radical leftists. But first, I want to talk with Matt Stringer out in West Texas. Matt, you had the opportunity this week, this past Wednesday, to see President Donald Trump visit in what was, I think, the first visit of a president to Odessa.
That's right, Brandon. You could feel the energy, so to speak, from the residents of Odessa and West Texans generally as the president made a historic visit. That a lot of lifetime residents that I've talked to are saying they believe that it is the first visit by a sitting president to the city of Odessa.
Which is interesting when you consider the Bush connection out there as well. And there have been presidents who have done things in Midland, but certainly historic for Odessa. And so what were the big topics? He had a couple of speaking events, one a pretty public speaking event that he toured an oil rig and all that. But what were the big themes of the visit?
Right. So the president landed Air Force One at Midland International Airport, and they took a motorcade over to the downtown Odessa Convention Center, where the campaign held a fundraiser that was heavily attended. I'm told it was sold out with over 400 attendees. And there he gave a very powerful speech to a room of very enthusiastic Texan supporters. Where he touched on a number of issues, everywhere from energy policy. He touched on the current presidential campaign and a number of related issues. Also present with him were a number of state officials, including Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, former Governor Rick Perry, and a number of recently nominated Republican congressional candidates from across Texas, including Colonel August Pfluger, that's going to seeking to replace retiring Congressman Mike Conaway here in Midland, Odessa, for the Texas's 11th congressional district. I also wanted to mention that some of the local energy industry leaders who made the Trump visit possible included Bubba Salisbury, who gave a powerful introduction to the president, to the Odessa crowd. The Salisbury family's been instrumental in not only fundraising for the Trump campaign, but was instrumental in the planning and bringing of the president out here to West Texas.
Absolutely. And with the backdrop of visiting an oil rig and being right there in the Permian Basin, no doubt energy was on the top of his mind, but very important, especially right now, given there was a downturn in the oil market, still sort of recovering right now. What did Trump say about his commitment to making sure that the energy industry continues to grow in Texas?
Well, that's true. The oil industry has seen a downturn of recent months, and you can mostly point to the Chinese coronavirus to thank for that. And the president highlighted a lot of the efforts that his administration took to stop the unprecedented downturn in the oil prices by standing up to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, negotiating a deal to keep them from flooding the markets with, I believe, about 10 million barrels per day, and then getting the Russian government as well as the Mexican government and OPEC to agree with the deal. And once that president put that in place, you saw oil prices rebound fairly quickly, hovering around in the 40-something dollars where they are today, which has been a lifesaver for countless families and that out here in the Permian Basin and in the United States generally, who make a living primarily off of the energy industry. It's also something that the president pointed out to is a national security tremendous importance, securing our national energy independence and being a tremendous net exporter of energy solidifies our stance as a global superpower and provides us with the security and independence that we need to operate from other foreign countries. I wanted to point out that after the convention center, the motorcade took the president to a local drilling rig, as you mentioned, owned by Double Eagle Energy, where he toured the rig and petroleum engineers explained to him the technical process behind it. And then there was a nearby tent where he gave another nationally televised speech. And after that speech, he held a pin signing ceremony where he signed off on a number of permits for oil field pipelines that are supposed to be something that the various different energy industry related companies were really needing.
Yeah, certainly an important visit, not just for Trump and for his campaign, but for the oil industry and the a good signal for the oil industry in the months ahead. I want to talk about one other story, a really important story you had up at TexasScorecard.com this week. Folks have seen this. If you haven't read our article, read Matt's article about it, check it out after this. But several doctors across the country who have been apparently successful in treating the coronavirus are experiencing what you've called an Orwellian-like oppression by the media and government regulators. What's going on?
That's right, Brandon. This story has actually unfolded over the past couple of months. And it started with some doctors who began exploring alternative treatments that includes the common malaria drug hydroxychloroquine. They studied that a number of private practitioners started using the drug along with, I believe, zinc and an antibiotic to curb the symptoms of coronavirus, COVID-19, and according to those doctors and their patients, they've had a strong showing of success with that treatment. Another treatment was developed by a doctor here in Odessa, Texas, Dr. Richard Bartlett, who approached things from a scientific standpoint, studying the virus, he says, and came up with a long-time used inhaled steroid called budesonide that's used for asthma, typically, and that's safe for just about every age range and has been around since the 1970s. Dr. Bartlett uses budesonide along with zinc and a Z-Pak, and he's had just hundreds of patients come forward who have given testimony saying that their symptoms cleared up or that they were able to breathe and that it helped treat it. Irrespective of all of this, the news media, the mainstream media, government regulators, number of public officials have sort of all pounced on these doctors. The media's run with headlines trying to discredit them. The government regulators have come in. We saw Texas Scorecard reported on one physician in the DFW area where the Texas Pharmacy Board was trying to limit their access, physicians' access to hydroxychloroquine for treating COVID-19, and we saw State Senator Bob Hall have to come in and help that doctor with that state regulator here in Texas. We've seen here in West Texas, Dr. Richard Bartlett getting a tremendous amount of pushback from local hospitals, media, and everything like that, that don't really have anything good to counter with. They just say, oh, well, this doesn't work, or pretty much reject it without giving it a thorough review. Notably, Dr. Robin Armstrong, who's the National Committee man to the Republican National Committee for the state of Texas, he made national news treating a number of patients in a Texas nursing home with hydroxychloroquine with what he says was tremendous success, and the media pounced and came after him.
It's not even just the media. I mean, it is social media, right, as well. Facebook, Twitter, even the president's son getting his account temporarily banned for daring to share some of this news.
Absolutely. Now we're seeing the tech giants pounce on it with unprecedented degrees of censorship. There was a news conference held in D.C. by a number of doctors, and that the video of that press conference went viral with millions of hits before Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube and other media entities started scrubbing it from everywhere it popped up. Now, the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., simply shared the video on his personal Twitter account. Twitter completely suspended his Twitter page for a period of time. The president himself shared it, and they deleted the president's tweet. And interestingly enough, I had my own experience with the censorship before my story published. I had shared a local news story about Dr. Richard Bartlett speaking to the Midland County Commissioner's Court about his treatment, and it was a fairly neutral, here's the facts story, and I got a notification from Facebook on my personal page that basically condemned me for sharing harmful and false information about COVID-19 and notified me my post was reviewed, but then to make it even, my post was removed, but then to make it even more Orwellian, they then pushed a link to the World Health Organization saying, here's a link to some factual information, and we're going to make this very, very easy for you to share amongst your friends. And of course, we all know that the United States just removed themselves from the World Health Organization for literally being a mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party. So it's been interesting to see this unfold over the past couple of months, and it was very interesting to compile all of this and get statements from lawmakers and show what all is being done on the pushbacks for these doctors, reputable doctors who say they have viable treatment options.
Absolutely. A very interesting story. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Thank you, Brandon.
Well, now we're going to switch gears. As we're talking about the coronavirus, you've got some schools saying they're not going to start in-person classes till September, October, even November in some cases. Chris Putnam, former Colleyville City Councilman and congressional candidate, writes in a Texas Scorecard commentary this week that now is the time for Texas parents to take back public schools from the radical left. Chris, what in the world is going on with public schools right now in Texas?
Yeah, Brandon. Well, so I first got involved in public ed politics several years ago when my own district started promoting this statewide effort to promote what they called the culture of voting, right? And the culture of voting was an initiative that was passed down, you know, by a lot of the Austin-based liberal lobbyist groups, public ed lobbyist groups and unions, in order to create a block voting dynamic for public educators. And so the idea, of course, is that public educators are going to, you know, organize in a way that they oppose conservative legislators, conservative candidates, and obviously, you know, support conservative legislation and oppose conservative legislators and conservative candidates and support, of course, you know, liberal candidates that are, you know, what they call quote unquote public ed friendly. And public ed friendly, of course, means, you know, they support, you know, all forms of liberal, you know, indoctrination in our schools, as well as just as much money, you know, as they can possibly, shovel into these public school districts. I mean, that's their principal interest. So that's how I got involved in it. And it was obvious. I mean, it was completely transparent that, you know, the idea here was, you know, to take taxpayer funded resources, right, our schools, mm-hmm. and turn them into a political weapon. You know, basically what's happening in Texas with the public ed lobbyists and unions is they effectively want to become the New Jersey's, you know, teachers union, which controls state politics there. And they're doing a pretty effective job at it right now.
And people hear about this and they think, okay, well, we know this happens in New Jersey, and we can probably understand that it probably happens in places like Houston and Dallas. But I mean, you're right. I mean, you're talking about this is happening in what would otherwise be considered conservative suburban areas of the state, and that basically no school district really is free or untouchable from these influences.
No, that's right. In fact, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, large school district you go to. And of course, I'm from Northeast Tarrant County in Fort Worth originally. Fort Worth is the superintendent that runs the Fort Worth Independent School District is a flat out liberal activist. I mean, as you know, they fire teachers for you know, basically tweeting support for Donald Trump. They were very active in promoting transgender bathrooms in Northeast Tarrant County right now. You know, the two that are at the forefront are the South Lake Carroll District, you know, which currently has a committee, a diversity committee, that's come back with a list of recommendations for basically creating a diversity police force, you know, where kids rat each other out for, you know, basically saying, you know, politically incorrect things and effectively, you know, basically just using their First Amendment rights. And of course, in Grapevine, Colleyville ISD, as you mentioned, I was the former mayor pro tem in Colleyville. You know, we've seen this for years. I mean, we have middle schools that are giving sexual identity tests to middle schoolers. Our district hosted on school property, taxpayer funded school property, just recently, a BLM protest where one of the current school board candidates actually, you know, kneeled, you know, in deference to BLM. We have Marxist clubs on campus, you know, and in the meantime, I mean, we've got drug dealers that are infiltrating our school cafeterias and taking selfies. I mean, the whole thing is just absolutely out of control. And it's because, look, the dynamic is it's very easy to understand. Like, people inherently want to be proud of their schools. They want to believe that they're giving their kid the best possible education. And then, you know, what happens is these public school districts, which are completely run from an administrative point of view, as well as at the board level by political liberals, social liberals, they just cheerlead. They make these parents, they reinforce how great everything is, even when mm-hmm. things aren't going that well. Like in my own district, academic performance is in complete decline. And that's at a period of time when we've raised taxes like 40 to 50% in the last 5 years. So we're spending more than we ever have. We're not actually increasing enrollment because increasingly a lot of parents are checking out of the system. You know, they're taking their kids to private schools because they see what's going on. And, you know, my concern is, look, if we fully abandon, you know, our public school systems and we stop fighting politically, you know, for our public school districts, you know, we shouldn't be surprised when we've, you know, educated basically an entire generation of little socialists and all the things that we're seeing right now, you know, in the streets that are, you know, and even in these suburban school districts where theoretically these kids are leading these, you know, these social justice efforts, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, it starts right in our own front yard.
What are your thoughts on the school districts now? This is a conversation that's being had or has been had in most school districts across the state of going to virtual learning, doing online stuff, not actually going back to in-person classes. Is that a benefit or do you think that that's harmful?
Well, I think this is kind of an important moment in time, right? Because the debate, you know, over whether to start schools back on time in classroom is really revealing, you know, what a lot of us have known for many years, you know, which is that it's really Austin and Austin lobbyist groups, public ed lobbyist groups, which are just huge and taxpayer funded, as you know, so they have a tremendous amount of power. I think it's an important moment because I think a lot of people that don't understand the politics of public education in Texas, and again, public education is a multi-billion dollar business in the state. It's a big deal. And there's a lot of people that, you know, stand to lose for, you know, if we actually get to actual reform. And so what you're seeing right now with the school delays and closures, it's become absolutely politicized. And I mean, this is a situation where, you know, we hear from the left all the time that we're ignoring the science about COVID when we resist mass mandates and business closures and those sorts of things. Well, in this case, they're completely ignoring the science, right? Because the science basically says that, you know, kids as a demographic group aren't particularly susceptible, you know, to the Wuhan Chinese flu. They're just not.
So, okay, Texas parents, they're fired up about this.
Yeah.
Your school board is elected. They're not partisan elections.
That's ridiculous, by the way. We should eliminate this notion of nonpartisan elections. Like, think about it. Whether it's a city council or a school board, you're deciding issues like taxation, spending, debt, the case of school board, curriculum, that these elections are theoretically nonpartisan. And I'll tell you firsthand that on the ground, they're 100% partisan, mm-hmm. 100%.
So what is a citizen? What is a parent? How do folks begin to hold their school boards accountable? Because, you know, ultimately they're the people elected supposedly to look over the schools. Yeah. They're not supposed to be run by the administration. They're supposed to be controlling the administration.
Yeah, and that's our problem. The tail is wagging the dog. I mean, everything mm-hmm. literally goes from the Austin lobbyists and unions and bureaucrats, the public administration, that dictates it to the school boards. The school boards are effectively nothing more than a PR mouthpiece for administration Austin. So we've lost completely this idea of local control. Does it exist? I mean, until the Texas Association of School Boards or the Texas Association of School Administrators or the TEA tells administrators what they want them to go implement, it doesn't happen. And they'll also tell them, you know, what they do want them to implement. And then it goes to the school boards, and the school boards, you know, run off and communicate it to citizens. But in the meantime, they duck accountability of how the public school bureaucracy in Texas actually works. A very good way to do that, by the way, is Dave Lieber, who is a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He's the watchdog columnist. He's actually a former Colleyville resident. He has written over the years an incredible series on the politics of public education in the state of Texas. And he lays out in intimate detail their tactics, how they silence critics, how they weaponize the PTA against critics, and just how big of a system it actually is, and how they, you know, basically use these school board meetings as pure theater because the decisions have all been decided behind the scenes, you know, back in Austin, and then agreed to before those meetings ever occur. So he is a phenomenal resource. Again, that's Dave Lieber with the Dallas Morning News. You can just Google it. You'll find access to it. I'll provide the link for you to share with your viewers. And then, you know, as you pointed out, it's about these school board races. And look, we have an opportunity this November, because a lot of the, you know, what is traditionally the spring local elections, which are completely gamed by, you know, the folks that are, you know, interested in the outcomes of those elections, whether those are city councils or school boards, are on the November ballot. And that means that a much, much, much bigger universe of voters gets to weigh in, you know, on some of these elections. So that's a good thing. I mean, I come from the, you know, the perspective that all local elections should be on the uniform, you know, election date. Mm-hmm. And so that we give the most possible voters the opportunity, you know, to make a decision on who our local elected officials are. And, you know, I tell people all the time, like, there is, to me, I really believe this. There is no, for Republicans, obviously, in particular, there is no bigger threat to Texas turning blue than if we continue to allow the left to control our school districts and our school boards. And by the way, this isn't an anti-teacher thing in any way. I actually come from a public education family. My wife was a professional public school teacher. My mom, my grandfather, all of our kids go to public schools. We 100% support teachers. And teachers don't understand that they're getting the raw end of the stick, actually, from, you know, from these lobbyists and administrators. They are pushing so hard because all of the national lobbying money comes from the big tech companies. All that budget is budget that's pulling away from teachers. Like in the Grapevine Colleyville Dependent School District, for example, we have some of the lowest paid teachers in the entire DFW area. That is insane when you think about, you know, the kind of affluence that, you know, exists in that district. But it's because they're de-emphasizing classroom teaching and public educators. It's also a part of why, you know, to your earlier point, you know, they're not so anxious necessarily to get back to school. A lot of them feel like this is an opportunity, right? And they're going to get to implement all their ed tech toys, get to self-learning. That obviously, you know, saves them money, and they don't need as many teachers, many frontline educators. And by the way, another reason that, you know, from an academic performance point of view, we're slipping radically.
Yeah, and a big opportunity, like you said, for folks who want to hold their school boards accountable, big, big opportunity this November with a lot of those races being on the November general ballot. Thank you for joining us so much this morning, Chris.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.